Hello, everybody, and welcome back to a brand new episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. So, guys, today we have a lot to talk about. Man, I'm so excited. You can probably hear in my voice that I am in a much healthier, relieved tone than I was from last week's episode. I don't dare listen back to it because, you know, every once in a while I jump into an episode and just go straight, from the hip, like off the cuff. And, sometimes it's just, it is just that genuine. You know, I feel like maybe that's also a good thing. It's a little bit hard for me to listen back to, especially when it comes to editing, because I'm like, was this too much? Was this too intense? Was this too somber? Did this just, like, bore everybody out of their skulls? But you know what? Whatever, man. It's my show. It's not like I have, brand deals for this podcast or, like, millions of listeners. I can still, do whatever I want, man. Like, screw you, man. Screw you, man. You didn't like it? Skip it. You know? But I feel like also just being that honest is just, kind of maybe a selling point to why people enjoy this. So anyway, all that out of the way. I am in a great mood now because it's a fresh week and we have a lot to talk about regarding Lollapalooza Berlin. Lollapalooza Berlin. Yeah, there's a lot to talk about, natürlich, because, this is a large festival. It was funny. We have so much to talk about with, regarding this festival. But I just had this memory of speaking to my booking agent, Fenya, at the festival. I spent most of the time with her. We were just hanging out sort of in the artist area. And there was one moment where she said that I was her first artist at this festival. And I went, oh, wow, that's a big surprise. Because she has, like, big bands, like, big musical acts. I think I am her only non-musical act. And to be, first off, not only just her first non-musical act, but I'm her first act at this festival. And, hey, self-bragging here a little bit, I'm the first non-musical act in the festival's history. How about that? How about, you like apples? How about them apples? Say yeah. That's pretty cool. So perhaps this opened the door at Lollapalooza for some other entertainers to be able to, for the festival to say, hey, this worked. It's okay. We can do this. We can have some more acts. There's some criticisms, I would say, about the setup for a non-musical act. And, again, like we're going to sort of break everything down. But just to finish that story, I was like, wow, I'm your first act here at the festival. I thought you'd been coming here with many bands for years because she does have a lot of very big bands. And she's like, oh, well, I think this is only like the second year the festival's been around. And I was like, oh, well, okay, well, then all that makes sense. We come to find out that this performance, this year, 2025, is the 10th year anniversary of Lollapalooza Berlin. 10 years. So it kind of amplifies how special it was that I was able to go there, not only as her client, but also as a non-musical client, and also as the first, 10 years, the first non-musical act. So that's cool. That's pretty cool. All right, so let's start from the beginning. I go up to Berlin the day before because my performance, as I've spoken about before, but, let's just imagine people haven't listened to the stressed out, depressed episode last week. The performance was the opening set on the alternative stage. So, it's a festival, and anyone who's ever been to any kind of musical or performance entertainment festival before knows that it's on usually a huge stretch of grounds, big area, and there's multiple stages and there's timelines for, each act, and they tend to overlap, so people will always, sort of be circulating, or like, the crowd fluctuates a lot, like coming to see half an hour of this, or, you know, they go wait early for something else, and, you know, or they have like one act, they go and just wait there the whole day. So it's, you know, it's a big mishmash of like what people want to do and what people want to see. And I was the opening act on this particular stage. It was an enormous stage. Enormous. Like, I cannot emphasize how big this stage was. I felt like I should have been up there with like an 8-person band. It was so big and so deep, like the stage was so deep, that the curtain behind me was only like halfway, because they were prepping, which is very common. I've played festivals as a musical act, and this is very common. Behind the curtain was an entire band's setup that the, you know, staff and crew were setting up and arranging so that, you know, the switch out is always very smooth. There's so much going on that the general public doesn't see. And it's astounding to witness it as a performer. It's kind of humbling. Like, I entered this enormous location, which, by the way, was at the Olympic Stadium in Berlin. They still have these Gothic towering, looming towers of concrete that are so tall. And there's two towers in particular, hashtag never forget, and strung up between these two towers is the, like, the Olympic symbol. You know, when, let me see here, when did the Olympics take place in Berlin? In 1936? What? 1936? They must have renovated that. Maybe they didn't. Dude, no, okay. Well, holy shit, because no wonder the building felt so, excuse my language here, but if the building felt so Nazi-ish. I mean, you know, shame on me for not knowing my history. But oh my God. But also shame on Fenya, who's a natural-born German citizen, who also, like, as we walked through this gargantuan stadium underground, which is, like, just steeped in the vibe of, oh, this was for Nazis, 100%. You, like, you walk through this thing, it's just, like, gorgeous, like, open concrete marble steps and pillars. It's, like, so breathtaking. And I made a passing joke, like, oh, this staircase feels like it was perfect for some marching, wink. And they were like, no, but this must be more modern than that. I mean, granted, there could have been renovations, but holy cannoli, dude, this place was so big. It is a stadium that holds 74,000 people, okay? Call the plumber, because we're going to let that sink in, right? That is an enormous stadium. Man, there's so much to get into, and my brain is so scattered right now. So, okay, this place, it's at the Olympic Stadium, and let's try and simplify it. There's an enormous stadium that is usually, you know, for concerts, but primarily for athletic events, right? So, football games. They renovated the entire floor of that, which is laid down in, like, temporary, I guess, like, aluminum flooring. Like, you could tell that you can, like, lay it down like sheets. So, like, imagine, like, aluminum roofing sheets or, like, metal slats, right? So that became, like, its own floor, I guess, to protect the grass underneath and stuff like that. So you kind of, like, when you approach the location, I had an Uber that dropped me off at the artist check-in, which was about 200 meters away from the main line, and which was cool to, like, be in the Uber and then, like, see all these people lined up to get in, everyone decked out in, you know, umbrellas and ponchos, which I'm going to get into that as well, because the weather had a real effect on the festival, which was kind of really actually the only downside was the weather. It was really bad weather the entire day. I also found out later that I think umbrellas are forbidden on festival grounds. that's odd, right? That's weird. I heard that later, and I was like, wait, what? Because I was using them like in the like, artist access only areas, not to brag. But like, you have access, you have areas that like you can come in and out of that are obviously for crew and for, emergency services and for the artists. So you don't have to like walk off the stage like from the front, jump over a rail. And there was obviously some umbrellas there, but the majority of like people everywhere used the ponchos. And I realized at one point, like I was the only person who kind of kept my umbrella with me. I didn't have to use it the entire time, but there were moments where I used it and I realized no one else was. And I was like, oh crap. And then someone was like, oh yeah, dude, like that's forbidden here. You're not actually supposed to use that here. Crowds at the festival can't legally have umbrellas. I don't know if it's a safety issue or if it's like a, what do you call it? Like an obstruction of like vision, because if a bunch of umbrellas, maybe people in the back can't see. I have a feeling it's more something to do with that, but that's odd. So they handed out ponchos to everybody. But anyway, so I go up the night before. I stay in this hotel. It's a nice early night for me. I'm rehearsing my performance. I had a couple of plans, but I ended up canceling both because I was nervous and I just like paced in my hotel room, just running my show and running my show. The next morning, I have a big fat breakfast at the hotel. The hotel breakfast, like eating area, which was really good. It was odd to sit alone in a place that was so busy and full of people and like families. It was very international. I was the guy that you see at a hotel breakfast with like a pile of like meats and cheeses and breads and eggs watching YouTube videos with an AirPod in. At some point I was able to let go of that, but the first second I'm like, oh, this feels odd. I'm not used to doing this alone. But I'm traveling as a comedian, kind of a one-man team. You don't really need like a posse. The next morning I had the breakfast. I had ironed my clothes because I'm a big boy. Okay. I brought my nice clothes. I ironed them in the hotel like an adult, trimmed my beard, showered, which I never do. And then, took an Uber past the line of people in all their ponchos. And then, about 200 meters down, got to the artist entrance. That's where I met Fenya. So, Fenya's my booking agent. She works for the agency Karsten Janke, who is she booked my tour for last October, and she is obviously she booked this festival and she booked this tour coming in October. Which, just a little side note, just for those who are having fun here, we have added Berlin to the festival. Oh, it's not the festival. We've added Berlin to the tour. We've added Berlin to the tour. It is official now, okay? It's official now. For anyone who has the countless people who have written me DMs or commented on stories or made comments on videos about like, why not Berlin? Why aren't you going to Berlin? You have fans in Berlin. Why don't you go to Berlin? I know. I legally couldn't announce it because of the Lollapalooza festival, okay? But I am now. Just to do a little promo here, just a little plug. My tour in October starts October 12th in Frankfurt. I go straight to Cologne, October 13th. Hamburg, October 15th. Berlin, October 17th at the Humboldt Saal Urania. I almost wanted to say Humboldt Saal Uranus. Butt joke. Anyway, I'm in a good mood, you can tell. So let's move on. So October 17th, Berlin. It has been added. So get your tickets now. Link is in the show notes. Come on, people. Let's go. Then Vienna, then Innsbruck. Then I have a double show in Munich that's going to be filmed for a YouTube special. And then Zurich will be the final show of the tour. So link is in the show notes. Go get your concert tickets now. Please and thank you. So I meet up with Fenya and we get our wristbands. And we walk through this weird, like, walking path. This is the first time that for an event so large, I am really seeing behind the scenes. And this is fascinating for me because normally, you know, I've played big festivals when I was, you know, touring as a musician, and I've seen sort of like behind the scenes to an extent, right? There's always sort of like a level of separation. But this was the first time where it was kind of just one of those things that we just kind of had to figure out where to go on our own, which was fun, but also weird, but also fun. Like, it wasn't an issue. It was just like, oh, okay, okay, let's see where we go. And for those who have never been to the Olympic Stadium, it, like I said, it fits 74,000 people. And for a stadium that enormous, and for obviously all the grounds around it, where all of the food trucks, bathrooms, and obviously other stages were set up, it's just this plot of land that's just gargantuan. And we walked sort of aimlessly down this road, passing like groups of people getting their, what do you call it, like their brief for the day, right? You'd have like this entire group of police people with one man talking to the group. I was like, oh my God, that's like 45 policemen getting briefed. Wow, I don't see that often. Then you'd see like all the crew, like blue shirt crew with clear plastic ponchos, you know, getting set up of like, who's going to go where, who's going to do what we're looking out for, blah, blah, blah. Then you saw like emergency services. We were stepping out of the way of the road for multiple ambulances. And it was just a really interesting sort of behind the scenes. You realize that for an event this large, that there, I mean, I would say easily could be upwards of 1,000 people working. You know, I asked Fenya if she thought some of these people, particularly for like emergency services or for like security, if any of those people were, you know, volunteering, and she's like, oh, no, everyone gets paid. Like, this is a job, this is an official job for everybody. And I was like, okay, that's cool. That makes sense. And then, you know, for such an enormous stadium, the artist area is like inside. You know, you forget that like these big buildings, people don't realize this, or I don't think about this all the time, but when you go to like a big concert in a big arena, you kind of, as a fan, as an audience attendee, are designed to not really think about the fact that underground is just like an anthill of complex tunnels and rooms. It is mind-blowing. It is like going underground into these tunnels under the Olympic Stadium in Berlin. It's so like jaw-dropping that I had a tough time sort of paying attention to like what we're doing, like where we're going. And I took pictures of like like parking garages, you know? I felt like such an old guy who like takes a photo of like a truck. I was like standing in this enormous concrete cavern, and it's so tall. It's like, you know, at least 2 stories tall, and it's, I don't even know how wide. I mean, just so gargantuan that you could imagine that 2 double-decker like Britain tour buses, you know, could pass by each other as they drive through, one leaving, one entering, with no issue. I mean, it's just that crazy. And I remember like I kept telling myself, oh, you know, you should play it cool. You should play it cool. And of course, I can't do that, man. That's just not me. So I looked over at Fenya and I was like, I cannot get over how sort of overwhelming the architecture is, like in this underground. And thank God she was cool too. She was like, oh yeah, this is insane, right? I was like, look at everything around us is built in concrete, and it's so smooth and it's so perfect. German engineering, natürlich. Shout out to the Germans who made that. I don't know if it's been renovated since, you know, the Nazi times, but I don't know. Even if it wasn't, like, it looks great, you know? It just is what it is. And I'm sure some of the driving tunnels were renovated because they didn't have cars as big as they do now, but like, it's just so breathtaking. Like, you're in such, you feel so small. You're like, oh my God, this is like an ant. I'm an ant in this enormous concrete like labyrinth, you know? And it's just really impressive. And then you're walking through, and you pass underground a parking lot simply designed for mega tour buses. So you're like walking through this thing and you think, oh, you know, this must be for cars, for emergency services. This might be like a tunnel for this and that. And then you like just stumble across an enormous underground parking lot that is like stacked with 12 double-decker, enormous, enormous tour buses. And they're just like leisurely parked. And people are walking around smoking cigarettes. You're like, what the hell? Like, how big is this thing? Anyway, we eventually like find some guy and we go, hey, do you know where the artist area is? And he spent more time telling us how difficult it was to find than telling us where to go. No joke. He sounded Irish. He could have been like a different from some part of England maybe, but he sounded Irish. And he was like, oh, it's very hard to get to. It's so difficult. It's so difficult. We're like, okay, but where do you go? And he'd say, well, you have to go outside here, and there's the festival opening there, and there's the staircase. Oh, it's so hard to get to. It's so difficult. Okay, but then when you get to the staircase, where do you go? Yeah, you have to go up, you have to stay inside, and you can ask someone there, and then there's another opening there. Oh, it's so hard to get to. I was like, don't tell me how hard it is to get to. Just say, go up, go left, go right. There it is. You know what I mean? Like, if it's hard to get to, we'll still find it if you give us like half, if you give us half of the journey. We can still ask someone up there, my guy. Like, don't, it's not, I mean, this is not, I'm not learning how to like land this plane in an emergency situation. Okay. I don't have to sully myself into the artist lounge to have a Apfelsaftschorle and a dry piece of bread with cheese. Like, just tell me where to go. And we were laughing at like how many times he said it was difficult to get to, as opposed to just saying where to go. But it was hard to get to, in all fairness, but he did waste our time. We got outside, and then, like this path that he told us to go on literally opens up, like, when you watch like a huge athletic event and you see the oh my God, I sound so disconnected from anything I've ever done in my life when I say, like, when you see the sports team enter out of like an alley, like you see, like, a team from a sport enter out of like, a tunnel. We kind of did that. We walked through this entrance way from the tour bus spot, and it was like into, like, literally into the ground floor of this enormous 74,000 person arena. And it was kind of shocking. I mean, just to stand in there where the athletes are was just enough of a thing of like, holy God, like, whoa. You're looking up and it's all concave, and there's like LED lights built into this glass rain cover, and it's just wild. It's really wild. So I took a lot of photos while Fenya tried to figure out where to go from there. And then we found this staircase and we go up the, anyway, long story short, it was difficult to get to, so, be that as it may, he was not helpful. We did find eventually the artist area. It was kind of absurd to find because there weren't signs. Like, we took paths that were limited to people that had the access we had, like with our bracelet. Like, it was a path that was like, oh, your artist or your crew take this way, but there was no signs of like, hey, artist and crew, are you looking for this? Take left, take right, go up, go down. There was just nothing. We kept asking people who were like smoking cigarettes with ponchos on. They were like, can't help you. Like, one guy who looked really serious, like with a crew jacket and like a, he had like a walkie-talkie. Fenya literally turned to him. I was right next to her, and she goes, like in German, she was like, sorry, can I ask you a, and he goes, and he said it. I don't know if he thought that we were not German, or maybe he wasn't German because it is Berlin, which is very common. But in like kind of a British accent, he goes, sorry, no time. And just buzzed past us like Noel Gallagher. It's like, so I might, no time. Don't look back in anger. And I remember looking at her, and she was kind of, her mouth was open. I was like, what a douche. That was so rude. Like, all he had to do was be like that way, Finally, she found a guy that she knew from like some previous job. Very nice guy, super nice guy. And he walked us to the area. And yeah, it was underground. And I remember like walking down these many, 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 many crazy, architecturally breathtaking, like marble staircases that are so far underground under a stadium of that size. And I made that joke, where I was like, oh, seems like these are kind of like, I mean, because I make the joke, I've made the joke many times before of the fact that, like, I have been inside the music school in Königsplatz here in Munich, and that famously was like a headquarter area for Mr. Mustache and his really crazy cool party of wild and crazy guys. And I made the joke of like, yeah, but yeah, the shit they did here was absolutely abhorrent and like terrible. But my God, what a beautiful building. You know, just wow, look at that building. Crazy. Good, you know, like it's a joke in the sense of like good taste, you know? Wow. Look at that architecture. So open, so beautiful, so tasteful. And then they just do the most disgusting, horrible things, like make the most terrible decisions in human history. Yeah, going down into that underground area felt like that. And here I am looking it up, like live with you on this podcast, like, oh, the 1936 Summer Olympic Games were held in Berlin, Germany from August 1st to August 16th. These games are infamous for being hosted by Nazi Germany and used for propaganda purposes. Well, shame on Fenya for not knowing that. You'd think a natural born German who went to a German school would have been like, oh yeah. Yeah. Of course. I mean, Jordan, look around you. This is dripping in Nazi propaganda architecture. But anyway, she did not know that, and I felt like a silly American making an assumption. But you know, I don't know what was, again, I don't know what was remodeled, but it felt a lot like that music, like the music school. I'll tell you that, you know. Anyway, it was kind of beautiful, but it was a pretty confusing labyrinth. We are underground and we get to this artist area, we check in, and they take us to like our own private room. And this is also a nice opportunity to, at this moment, like catch up and really talk to my booking agent because, you know, we speak only primarily in these like professional emails. You know, she's 30, I think she said. And she loves music, and she's funny, and she's smart. And on the tour last year, when we, you know, spent a little bit of time together on one show, it's just not a lot. It's not a lot to like get to know the person you're working with. And this was a good opportunity to do it because she had two acts at this festival. I was supposed to perform on the same day as her other artist, which is like it's a band. It's an Australian rock band. But because they had a different festival conflict, like a scheduling conflict, they were moved to the next day, which sucks because I really wanted to meet them. Like I actually like their music. So she basically had nothing to do on that whole day except for just be there for me, like make sure everything works out for me, and then she could just leave. And then the next day she had the other act to worry about. So we go in this artist area, and it was just nice to get to know her, just to chat and learn a bit about each other's history. You know, there's so many things we didn't know. It was just good to like build sort of a professional relationship, but you know, building trust, building like a connection. And I really believe in that. I really think that's so important. You know, she's handling this entire tour for me, and she, you know, sometimes has to make tough decisions and things like that. So it's good to know that like, oh, I'm reading this person through and through, and she's actually a good soul, because old listeners of this podcast will know that my like the last booking agent I had when I was a musician only was just an absolute narcissist psychopath who clearly like wasn't paying taxes and you know was like a fraudulent you know scammer, and it felt abundantly clear that I was like in good hands like quite quickly. So that was nice. We had a good chat, and then the show time, like the sound check time, was coming close, so we asked a crew member who knew Fenya to take us to the stage. Now, this was a bit of a relief because, you know, getting there, finding this location, finding all this stuff was really complicated and like really took a long time. But thankfully, because we had a crew member there inside the artist area, like where everyone had their own space and stuff, which, by the way, is the funniest sort of location because every artist, you know, tries to set themselves apart. Like they have like every kind of artists, in a sense, kind of almost looks for a gimmick, maybe even subconsciously. So as we're talking, I look over and there's this like table of what appears to be an all-girl act. I don't know if they all just sang or if they played instruments. I don't know. I didn't know them, but they were all like dolled up like to hell and back. Like they had like sequin, like cropped, diamond jeweled tank tops, like very revealing, sexy pop star clothing and crazy makeup and glitter under their eyes and like their hair done. And it was just a funny feeling of like, I'm so glad I don't have to be like, I'm so glad to like just be a comedian that I can just hang out and not feel like, oh, do I look cool enough? Like, do I look cool enough? Because I, as a musician, as a music act, I thought about that all the time. And it just sucks. It kind of clashes with like the artistic aspect of it. Like presentation is such a big deal. And it's just like, I'm so glad I'm dressed nice and I'm just going out to just try and be funny. So that felt good. So we had this person from the crew walk us to my stage. And thankfully, like from that artist area, the tunnel, the different tunnel that we would take to get to my stage was a much simpler path. It was literally like out this door, up a couple of stairs, through a different door. Then there was a kitchen, but then you go past that kitchen, and then there's one more door, and then one more set of stairs, but then you're there. I know it sounds like I'm making a joke that it is complicated, but once you did that one path, you're like, oh, but I just take the same path back. That's okay. That's okay. I was worried that I would have to like go around the whole place again and like never find it. So I go out. Of course, it's just pissing rain. This was really like the only negative of the entire experience. The whole day it's just raining. Every crew member, every emergency responder, every sound mixer, all the guests, basically, everyone's in a poncho, and it's kind of like, oh man, I'm the opening act, which is already a bit of a gamble. Like, are people gonna come to the first set of a festival? Oftentimes not, unless it's a band that people kind of already know, or they're just like festival heads and they want to like get their real money's worth for their ticket and see as many acts as they can, which is also a thing. But I go to the sound check. I check my stage, huge stage. And we look out in the grass, and it's like maybe I would say 30 minutes before I'm supposed to start. And understandably, don't get me wrong, understandably, no one's there, right? And it's just an empty grass field. And the sound designer guy comes up to me and he's like, hey man, so we can't do a sound check. I was like, oh, that's fine. I'm just a microphone. He's like, yeah, I thought that'd be easy. Again, I am the first non-music act the festival's ever had, and they've been doing it for 10 years. So I think they're also a little bit like, what do we do with this guy? But everyone was very kind. I shook hands with a lot of people, just, thank you for your help. Thanks for helping me out. Then, they were like, if you need anything, let me know. Everyone was super, super, super nice. And I was like, yeah, I don't really need a sound check. It's just me. I was like, I kind of talk at the same level, and I've gotten used to if I really raise my voice, I have like the muscle memory to kind of pull the mic away a bit. So I don't think you're going to have a lot of issues with sound. And I said, okay, cool. And then I was just looking out at the empty grass, and I told Fenya this. We had a good laugh about this, but I was like, part of me almost kind of. I know it sounds strange. Part of me almost would have liked if it would have stayed like an empty grass field. I know that sounds terrible. It sounds weird. Like, oh, I just squished my finger. Ah, damn. Ow. Sorry. Oh, that hurt. I just like, I don't know how I did that. I just like had my finger under the desk, and then I t slightly turned my chair, and the armrest on my chair pinched my fingernail between the desk, oh, and it in itself. Anyway, it's fine now. I know it sounds counterintuitive, to say like, oh, I maybe it'd be great if no one was there, but part of me was like, it's raining, and I will feel guilty if people are standing out there. I'm the opening act, and it's just. I've been practicing the set a lot, but it's almost like a good chance for me to just kind of like, it sounds weird, but it would really take the pressure off. You should want pressure. You should be like going towards the uncomfortable things, because that's how you learn and develop as an artist. Like, that you have to go into the unknown, and like, you have to be scared. So obviously that wasn't like what happened in the long run, but you know, the lazy like introvert of me was like, maybe if no one came, I could just like look into the distance, do my set, be on time, and not worry about if anyone liked it or not. You know, it's just like the simple, cozy version of like my thing. But at the end of the day, it's also dumb that I thought that, because if no one had come at all, maybe the festival wouldn't be open to future non-musical acts, you know? So it was kind of selfish that I thought that, you know? But it was just being funny in the moment. I'm glad that people came. So there was no sound check. We looked everything around. I put my jacket down. We went back one more time to the artist area. I used the restroom. I grabbed like a noon beer just to kind of take off this, you know, nervous energy edge. Because despite, you know, like, there is nothing more heart-poundingly nerve-wracking than doing stand-up comedy. Like, it's just, it is actually like so painfully nerve-wracking the first, at least for me, like the first 10 minutes. It's really hard. It's really not hard like, oh my God, it's the same as working in a coal mine or working in a factory. It's not like a hard job. It's just, it's so nerve-wracking. It just really, it just makes my mouth dry. It makes my heart hurt. It makes my chest numb. You know, like I always think like, am I having a heart attack or am I just nervous? It's every single time. It's every single show. You know, it's just that moment. Once you can read the audience, the calmness comes with that. So let me break down what the festival show in itself was like, because it had a lot of factors involved that, you know, there's like I said, the really only negative thing I could say was I just hated that it was raining the whole time, because I felt so bad for the people. And perhaps that might have also had an effect on the outcome of the crowd. There was a good crowd. Don't get me wrong. Like, Fenya was happy. The festival promoter that I met was happy. Like, there was a good crowd. But I also wonder, if it had been a bright, sunny day, surely there were people that didn't come to the opening acts of the festival if they wanted to see the headliners later in the evening. If it's pouring rain, of course, you know, I wouldn't go. So I go back down, I get a little beer, I, you know, kind of stretch a little bit, drink some water, and then it's showtime, right? So from the time I had left the stage and come back, people had shown up to the stage, which was great. Cause I mean, that shows that like either there were people, I mean, it's probably a mixture, but either there were people that came to that show in that window because they knew it was me and they liked me, which was some of them, certainly. And another group of them probably were just like, oh, let's see what this, you know, what this act is going to be like. It's an opening act. On a stage, this is a picture I have to paint for you. On a stage not too far away, far enough away where my set worked, but just far away enough where it was constantly on my mind, there was, on a different stage, the very, 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 very first act of the entire festival. I was the first act of my stage, but there was one band that started the entire day, and they started half an hour before I did, and they ended like 30 minutes into my set. So they had their hour, they had like 1 hour set, and my set started at their half hour point. So this was also a thing that was hard, I think, for a non-musical act, because when you have bands playing on different stages, as you know, when you're on stage playing with a band, you don't hear the other band unless your song ends. And then you kind of hear this like, like this distant, you know, sort of like muffled speaker version of the other band. But it doesn't bother you, because the moment you start your next song, you don't hear it. And also the audience, you know, is used to it. You know, it's festivals, right? But as a non-musical act, when you come out to the stage and in the background is like, it's a little distracting. It's a little distracting. And I came out nervous, man. There was a good turnout for the opening 10 minutes of the show. And from that moment on, a lot of people kept coming in. And there was like this second brain thing going on. Let me try and explain this. So when you're doing like stand-up, it's a lot like a one-man play. It's a lot like, it's just basically like one big hour-long monologue because every single word is memorized. Like every word is memorized. And it's only when you're like really, really comfortable and relaxed that you can sort of improvise in between these things because you know what your next thing is and you feel comfortable enough to sort of like riff a little bit with the audience and like, you know, play around a little bit. And that happened towards the end of my set. But I would say the first like 10 minutes or so of my set, at least the first 10, I was a nervous wreck. I mean, I had people there that I knew who said that they didn't notice. But sometimes you have to wonder, okay, are they just being friends and they're just being nice, you know? Because for me, I was like, one person was a German woman and she was honest, thank God. And I was like, I was so nervous in the first 10 that I remember I like raised my hand up, you know, like gesturing, like as you're talking yourself, like gesturing with your hand. And I looked over and it was literally uncontrollably trembling. So I put it down, like I put it by my waist because I'm like, oh my God, I'm trembling. Like, this is so obvious to me. And she was like, yeah, I saw that you were a bit like shaking at first. She's like, but then it got a lot better. but you know, I'm coming out, the audience is good, but the second brain thing in me is, I didn't explain that. When you're doing stand-up, you have the monologue thing, right? The words are rehearsed down to a T. But as you're going through the motor of what you're saying, there's this second brain. So there's another right behind your head, like right on top of the things you know you're supposed to say and you're how you're supposed to say them. There's like that subconscious voice. And it's saying, you know, oh my God, you're so nervous. Do they see that you're so nervous? Your hand is shaking. Put it down. Oh my God, it's raining so hard. Do you think they're able to focus on how focus on your jokes because of how bad it's raining? Do you think they're uncomfortable? Do you think they want to go? Oh, I just saw those people leave. Oh, but you have to remind yourself, Jordan, it's a festival. So people always rotate in and out of sets. It's nothing to do with you. Oh, some more people just came in. Do you think they know you? Or do you think they just heard English being spoken? I hope they heard the setup for that joke because maybe they're not going to get the punchline here. I can't quite hear them. Oh, I heard that girl laugh. Am I not doing well? Am I bombing? Oh, I heard them laugh. So maybe I am doing okay. It's just very loud. Oh, that band is so loud. I hope they heard that line that I said. You know what I mean? There's like that all that voice that's just like beating you to death the whole time while you're repeating a memorized monologue. It's a really crazy like thing to do. It's a really crazy setup. And it was a tough show just for that. It was good practice. I'm very, very, very glad I did it. And I'm gonna get to like the real positives in a second, but like those first 10 to 15 minutes, having a band really loud in the background. Not sure if people can really hear you, not really hearing laughs, seeing smiles, like seeing the faces, but not hearing it. Oh my God, that's the worst because like you're sort of like matching the energy or the speed of your delivery based on how they're reacting. But if you can't hear them, which I didn't until later, man, it's just tough because you're kind of like, you're literally throwing darts into a pitch black room wondering if you're hitting the dartboard at all, you know? And it's not until later that maybe someone turns on a light and you're like, oh, well, there was a few things that struck like pretty well, but I just didn't see it in the moment. Thankfully, around the halfway point of the set, I had calmed down quite a lot. So I was taking my time. I was setting up my jokes better. And the band had stopped. They were like switching out the sets. And the best thing that happened for the set, despite the rain, because that really stayed on my mind the whole time. I felt so bad that people were standing for stand-up comedy. That sucks, dude. The last tour, I hated that for all the people. I hated that. That's why I'm so happy this tour is seated. By the way, this new tour in October, it's new material and it's seated. So please get your tickets. But the last tour was standing and I hated that for them. But, you know, I was just playing smaller venues, trying to sort of like build up an audience. And But for a festival, that's tough. You know, it's like a few hundred people and they're just standing and it's raining and you just feel bad for them and you can't quite hear them laughing. And so you're in your head a lot. But around the halfway point, a lot of people came up right to the railing. Like for people who've never been to a festival before, usually there's the stage, there's a small gap between the stage and the railing. And there's like a fenced railing. And in that gap, there's the security guards who make sure people aren't getting too rowdy or crazy. Not that that was going to happen at my show. And it's for press, for the photography, for videographers, things like that. So people can move around and, you know, gather photos and keep things safe. And then at that railing, that's where like the last line people in the audience can approach the stage. And thankfully around the halfway point, that fence lined up with people. And there was like a row of people at the railing and then a row of people behind them. And then there was a little gap. And then there was like the mishmash of people who like some people, like I quite a lot of people I saw stayed the entire time, but there are always going to be people that just like fluctuate in and out. They have to pee. They want to get food. They want to get a good spot for this other band. So that was also something I had to kind of like keep in my head. Like they're not having a bad time. It's just a festival. Once the people came up to the railing, I could finally hear their laughing, and man, that just changed everything. So the last half of the show, I had a lot of fun. I still felt bad about the rain. And I still had to like kind of keep the guilt of the rain and the standing. Like I just had to like kind of just throw it away. Like just, it's, you can't change this. So just do your best. And, I worked on some new material, so a lot of new stories that I'm working on for the new tour. And there were people in the front who were like engaged and screaming things out and laughing really hard. And I knew that I had done a better job than I thought when at some point I announced that I was about to start my final story, like my final setup for the show. And someone was like, oh no. I was like, okay, Jordan, you're all right. You're doing okay, you know? So I did my final joke and then announced to everybody that like, hey, if you enjoyed this, like, thank you for sticking this out in the rain. You guys are amazing. And Berlin has officially been like publicly announced. It's added to the tour. So please go get your tickets. And they were super nice about it. They had good applause. And I ended like just before my time slot. So the crew was happy because they had plenty of time to switch out for the next act. And yeah, I grabbed my water and my little beer and went back to Fenya. And then all this pressure just came off. You know, it was just like, okay, I did it. All this hard work, all this memorization, you know, it was good. It was a nice relief. And then, you know, had a few more beers and it was like kind of an easy day after that. But I would suggest that for festivals like this, and I know this was a new thing that Germany also does not have a lot of outlets for like greater access to stand-up comedy. They, you know, there's a lot of like small sort of open mic style places that do these little things. But like for, you know, the first tour I did was like rock venues. It was standing only. And then for the next tour, it's like theaters or like public speaking locations, which is also great. I mean, I'm really happy for the setup for the new tour. But I would say for festivals, my biggest suggestion, something I really would be a huge advocate for if the opportunity were to, come to fruition, that festivals like this have a maybe even slightly smaller, you know, that's okay too, a slightly smaller location that is covered with chairs. It just makes sense to me. If you had like a closed off tented area, like imagine if my stage had been like not a stage like for bands and non-music acts, because it was a huge like band stage. But imagine if the alt stage was just like either, you know, maybe singular singer-songwriters that have like 2-3 band members max, and comedians and, you know, I mean, I don't know if people would like to hear poetry. I'm just like spitballing like ideas that are non-musical acts, magicians, I don't know. But like just a tented area that has a finite amount of seats where people can stand in the back and rotate in and out if they want. But it's a smaller stage. It's a confined space. There's chairs, and you can really interact and hear the people and like vibe with them and relate to them. And I think that would make a lot more sense because you could also do like 45-minute sets that rotate frequently and have like, oh, we're going to have a magic show, for 30 minutes. We're going to have whatever, poetry or something for, or like freestyles or something like that for this window. And then, for this act, we'll have stand-up comedy and like another stand-up and then maybe like ending with like a really nice, singer-songwriter or like pianist or something. I think that would work better than this because I was so happy to be there and I'm so grateful to Lollapalooza for having me. It's a really, well-known international IP. It's a big festival. I'm so glad I did it. So thank you to Lollapalooza. It would just be a suggestion for moving forward because no one was kind of anticipating this much rain. And for a non-musical act, that's really tough to engage with people and make sure they're having a good time, that they feel that it's worth it to stand out in the rain. Because a band, even like a mildly mediocre band that's like sort of good, is a sometimes enough motivation for people to stay out in the rain because they feel like they're getting their money's worth. They can look at the guitarist, they can look at the drummer, they can look at the bassist, they can decide if they think the singer's attractive or not or whatever. But like they can kind of tap their foot and vibe out and talk with their friends. But with stand-up, it's a bit more of like they know that like talking super loudly to their friend next to them isn't really cool. Like they know it's more respectful to, pay attention. And in that environment, in a big open air stage, especially with rain, and again, it was their first time doing this, so I'm not really judging anything, but I would say, that makes it a lot harder. It makes it a lot harder for the audience, to be able to kind of forget and let loose and, have fun with it. But yeah. Anyway, I'm grateful to Lollapalooza. I had a lot of fun and really glad that I did it. Now I can just focus on the book. The book is going to come out. Again, pre-order the Prince of Germany book. It's a memoir of funny anecdotes, stories, and essays of my journey through the South and through Germany. So please go check that out. You can pre-order it on Amazon. The link is in the show notes. I also, again, I've added Berlin to the tour for this October. And the link is also in the show notes. So please go and get your tickets if you have not already. Pre-order the book if you have not already. It means so much to me. And yeah, I guess after the performance, I basically hung out with Fenya a bit more, and then she had to go. She had to like work on some stuff at her hotel room for the other band for the next day. I ran into a couple of friends. You guys might remember an episode I did a few weeks ago with Steffi from Lerne Deutsch. She's like, a German teacher. Well, she yeah teaches German, yeah, and she's like a content creator. And she and her husband Shlomi, they live in Berlin, so they attended the event, and I got to hang out with them for a bit, which was really nice. People who work in the same industry and they're like the same age, so you can really like dig deep and they're talk about, the ins and outs of it, but also just personal life. They're very sweet people, very kind people. And then yeah, I the highlight like act, the headliner act of the event was for that evening was Justin Timberlake. And probably to the dismay of a lot of my friends and most likely my mom, I did not stay to watch Justin Timberlake. The rain got to me, man. That's why I felt so bad for the audience. The rain got to me. Like at some point, I was hanging out with these two people, and there was, some nice fans that came around like to take a photo or something. That was very sweet. But like I didn't really know anybody else. Like once Fenya was gone, I didn't have like, like an anchor of like someone cool to chill with, And then it was getting pretty late. It was, I don't know, maybe like 6-ish or 7-ish. Oh, it was like 7:30 or something, I think. And it was just like really pouring rain. And we were all just kind of tired, and like Justin Timberlake wasn't going to start for like another 2.5 hours. We didn't know any of the other bands. you know, nothing really like clicked for us where it was like, oh, but we should go see them and then go see them and then go see them. So we really spent like 5 hours talking, catching up. But then at the end of that, it was like, well, do we want to stay another 2.5 hours in the rain and watch JT sing like Cry Me a River? And I was like, no, not really. Not really. I don't know. Not really, you know. And I was like, well, you know, we'll see videos of it. And then, yeah, I got a ride from them. They took me back to my hotel, and then they went home. Yeah. And it was a good choice for me going back to the hotel, just kind of detoxing, taking off the, you know, the freshly ironed sort of nice clothes and put it back at like t-shirt and shorts and just, you know, showered and just, you know, watched some videos online and just went to bed. It was just, I really needed that. I really needed that after such a long day. But yeah, thanks guys. Yeah, the Lollapalooza was a big, fun success. Thank you again to them for having me. I'm so grateful for the entire experience. And I'm glad to have that off my plate now. I can focus on the book. Again, go get your concert tickets for October. Go pre-order the book if you have not done so, please. And thank you. And thanks, guys, for listening. I hope you had a fun time. I love you guys so much. Have a great week, and I will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye. Look out, baby. The Saints are coming through. And it's all over now. Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.